I'm Stacy Grinsfelder from Blake Hill House.
And I'm Devin Caldwell from Our Philly Row. We're the hosts of True Tales from Old Houses.
Hi, Devin. How are things in Philadelphia?
Things are great. It's a beautiful day here.
We are almost at peak colors, and every day is like the most beautiful fireworks display you've ever seen. It's gorgeous.
Wow, we're just starting to turn here. It's amazing how we're not that far apart, but just the fact that you're north of me, you know, it works its way south.
Yeah. My in-laws are in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they're about 2 weeks, well, in spring, I guess. I can't tell you about fall. They're probably 2 weeks behind us. But in spring, they're about 2 weeks ahead. So I can always tell when something's blooming there. We have pretty much the same foliage, but we're going to get it about 2 weeks later. So it is really interesting. It feels close, but there are some differences. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the four seasons. And, the East Coast has the four seasons, and I really do love that.
Right. It is true. I think we technically have four. Our spring is a little bit sort of like mud season. I guess that's similar to Vermont and New Hampshire in a way. We barely feel spring here, but we do have four seasons, and I like that too. Today's episode kicks off our annual October Ghost Story series. Now, every October, we do tell lighthearted ghost stories about, they've been mostly friendly ghosts, a little mischievous from time to time.
Mostly.
Mostly, yeah. And Devin, truly, I mean, before True Tales from Old Houses, I had no idea how many people really believed in paranormal activity. I probably just wasn't really paying attention. I'm not sure. But I mean, my very limited experience led me to believe that, you know, experiencing things like ghostly phenomena, I mean, it was reserved for like maybe Wiccans and my 95-year-old grandmother. I don't know, you know, and of course, grandma, you know, 95. Maybe she's seeing things that aren't really there. I don't know.
Perhaps. Well, I have to admit that, you know, by nature, I'm a bit of a skeptic, but I'm also open-minded to things and willing to accept things. Although I'm so fact-based in everything that I think about. But, you know, I wouldn't rule out the possibility that there is something there.
And you are like so many people. I mean, I had an experience, and maybe next episode I can tell you about it if you want to, that really kind of changed my mind. I kind of asked my family, I took an informal poll. My mother does not believe in ghosts, nor do my children. And as a child, I feel like I was kind of afraid of everything. So I don't know what made them so brave. And even Andy, despite having an actual paranormal experience that he described, I believe it was episode 17. Oh, it was titled, "This Is Not a Dad Joke." Even Andy's like, you know, I'm a man of science. That is not a thing. But I do have one regret. I never really had a chance to ask my dad, but honestly, I suspect he probably would have said no.
No matter what we believe, it's always fun to record these episodes.
Yeah, it is. It is, for sure. Before we get into today's guest ghost story, we do have a couple of announcements. The first announcement is kind of our attempt at matchmaking. This is an unusual announcement, I admit. But we have a longtime listener who describes herself as a wannabe old house owner, and she lives in the Chicago area. So she is seeking an opportunity to do some volunteer DIY on weekends. Now, naturally, my first thought was Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, and she looks into that, and the build sites are just too far away, and most of their work takes place during the week.
Right. I think she has a day job. Next, she thought of our listeners who are working on old houses, and she thought that someone might need an extra pair of hands for their project. So that brings us to the matchmaking part of this announcement.
It does indeed. So if you're working on an old house in the Chicago area, and you could use some volunteer or weekend help, contact us via the form on the website, truetalesfromoldhouses.com. And we will put you in contact with her.
Devin and I are merely the go-betweens, but the particulars are up to you. Devin, I think you have an update on our merchandise situation. Is that correct?
I do. We looked at a lot of different things to do for merch, but this is our first merch run. And so we thought we would just probably keep it simple the first time around. And so we're going to stick to t-shirts and sweatshirts because we know that everybody needs a t-shirt and a sweatshirt. Winter's coming, so sweatshirts are going to be great. And we'll have something up on the website and some photos, and we'll talk more about the ordering process.
Right. I'm excited. I'm so excited. I am waiting for a hoodie. You know, my fashion sense really just lends itself to hoodies and t-shirts. So,
well, working at old houses does for sure.
Those announcements were super short. I feel like we're just whipping through this episode today. We're just getting stuff done here. Like we're marking things off the to-do list, right? All right. So I guess it's Q&A time already. Who wants to ask the question today? Do you want to ask it? Do you want me to ask it?
I'll ask you. Today's question is pretty simple, but I'm really curious of your response. And the question is, what is your favorite old house DIY task?
So you have no idea what I would answer for this.
I do.
Oh, do you? Actually, I don't know. I kind of set you up. That was an accidental setup to maybe be disappointed because I do feel like most people would think that I would say, oh, I love working on old windows. Is that what you were thinking?
Well, that's the first thing that flashes into my mind, but I, you know.
Right, right. Okay. I love old windows, but sometimes the tasks, the actual, you know, nitty gritty of working on old windows can be a little tedious. And I would not say that that is my favorite. But I will tell you, I thought about this question too before I talked to you today, because there are very few tasks that I actually dislike as far as DIY related tasks. I kind of get in this sort of headspace where it doesn't really matter if I like them or I don't like them. I still have to do them. So my right. I try to keep my attitude in that place where it's more neutral. Like, you know, I'm just completing this task. I neither like it nor dislike it. Now, I have moments. I have moments in every task where I'm just sort of tired of it. But I work really hard and I'm not always successful. But I will say lately, or 2 weeks ago, I guess I finished 2 weeks ago, I did some repointing on my stone foundation, and I used lime mortar and mixed it up and pressed it into, you know, the cracks and smoothed it. And I found that so meditative. I was, you know, chipping out the old mortar and then replacing right. it and making the whole thing look so beautiful. And it was, I found these moments where I was just kind of, I didn't listen to music. I didn't listen to podcasts. I just kind of stayed in this really, I don't know, Zen weird moment. Do I sound like a crazy person? But I just kind of stayed in this moment where I could, I could just hear the birds and I was just doing my task and not really attached to the outcome, except for hoping it looked really good.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed that, but it makes total sense. It totally does. So I get it. I really do. I think my favorite DIY task in general is painting, because I love the transformation that painting can do.
Right.
For not a very big investment, you can transform a space. Plus, paint hides a lot of things.
You betcha.
But I think, interestingly enough, my favorite old house DIY thing, which I haven't done much of in our house currently, but I've done in virtually every other place I've ever lived, I love to strip the paint off of the metal door hardware.
Oh, yeah.
It never fails. Doorknobs and door latches and all of that get painted. I love to go in, especially like with mortise locks, take the mortise lock out and clean it up and re-expose the brass edge and clean up the doorknobs. And same goes with like light switch plates and, you know, like especially vintage light switch plates, you know, get the paint off of those things, because those are the details that really stand out to me when I come into a room. When I can see the door hardware, it just makes me smile.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
So I have not done it much in our new old house, our current house, mainly because almost all of our door hardware is rim locks and I'm just not as familiar with rim locks, but I'm learning.
I have this theory about painting hardware. Like, I really think that at first some people painted it just to not have to shine it up anymore, maybe just for ease. But then I also think that, you know, over the years, somebody came in and got a little bit of paint on the hardware. Then the next person got a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the third person was just like, you know what? Just paint it all. It looks terrible. Paint it all rather than taking it off and removing the paint. So I don't know if I'm right, but it's a big old pain in the neck.
Yeah, I'm definitely of the school of removing as much hardware as possible when you do a paint job.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's so easy. It's so much easier than removing paint from hardware, everyone. So keep that in mind.
Yes, it
keep
is. Keep that in mind. Hey, Stacy. We usually take a pause during the interview portion of the show to talk about ways to support True Tales from Old Houses. How about if we do it now instead?
That's fine by me. We'll let today's guests just roll on through. How about if I start?
Sure.
All right, here are some non-monetary ways to support True Tales from Old Houses. Tell a friend or anyone who loves old houses about the show, or share us on social media. As you're listening to an episode, take a screenshot and share it with your friends and followers. You can also leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And we say it all the time because it's true. Those ratings and reviews help people find us and let them know that this show is worth a listen.
Now, if you're able and you'd like to help with the overhead costs of producing the show or buy us a cup of coffee, you may choose to make a one-time or reoccurring donation over on the True Tales from Old Houses website. If you donate in the $20 to $25 range, we will send you a coffee mug with the True Tales from Old Houses logo on it as a thank you gift.
Thank you for your generosity in all ways. Without you, there would be no True Tales from Old Houses.
Today's ghost story comes from listener John Harrington. It is about items lost and then found in the most serendipitous ways.
Is there a benevolent someone or something watching over John's house and family? We'll let you decide.
I'm John Harrington, and I live in the Enos Kellogg House, which is a 1770s saltbox farmhouse in Norwalk, Connecticut.
All right. Welcome, welcome. It's so nice to have you here, John.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're glad you're here. Wow, 1770s. That's older than I thought.
The date keeps moving. We bought it. We thought it was 1750s. Then it bumped up to the 1780s. And then the deeds keep turning up. And we're about 1774 now is where we think it was originally built.
Very, very interesting. So tell us a little more of the house, because I want to hear more about the house at the moment.
Sure. The house was built as a farmhouse, kind of a subsistence level, you know, one family, one farm. Farmhouse in Norwalk. Our town was founded in the 1640s. It was kind of one of the early Southern Connecticut towns that was settled. And the family that built our house, the Kellogg family, was one of the original settler families for the town. And they kind of started moving inland from from Long Island Sound. And our house was kind of the second tranche of development as they moved inland a little bit. So the Kellogg family owned all the land around our house and started parceling it out to the kids as the years went by. Our house was actually built by, we think it was built by James Kellogg, who lived here for about 10 years, 15 years, and then sold it to his cousin Enos Kellogg, whose family then lived here until 1917. So passed down directly in the descendants of the family until then.
So I know Kellogg's cereal. Are we same thing, same difference? How's that related?
It's a very, very, very distant relationship. Yeah, they moved up to Michigan. You know, parts of the family did eventually. They moved to Ohio and up into Michigan, I think in the 19th century. So there's some connection, but I won't make any claim to it.
Okay. So what's the connection, or who is the Kellogg family that owned so much land in Connecticut?
They were, as I say, one of the early settling families of Connecticut because they were one of the first ones to get land grants down in the southern part of it. Them and I think there's like maybe six other families. They divided up huge swaths of land in the early 17th century, built a lot of farmhouses. It was mostly a rural agricultural area at that point. There was some shipping, some merchant stuff happening on the coast. We're right on Long Island Sound. So it's a nice, you know, there was a good harbor in Norwalk. There was some commerce there, but definitely it was mostly just agriculture. You know, each generation we get a new house, they would subdivide and take on more land kind of out in the wilderness. We're about 4 miles from the Sound, but this was the wilderness, you know, in 1700 and slowly got settled as they moved westward.
Oh, sure.
Right. So it sounds kind of like they were in the right place at the right time and ended up with a lot of land and
a lot of land. Absolutely. And the families all intermarried. So we started as a Kellogg house, became a Comstock house. The Kelloggs who built our house married into the Comstock family. But it was very incestuous. So they just kept, you know, they would subdivide the land, but they were sharing it with themselves, really.
Interesting.
It's really great to have you here today, John. And of course, we wanted to find out more about your house. But one of the main reasons we had you on the show is because I believe you have a ghost story or a supernatural experience of some kind to share with us.
and I'd call it a Halloween story, probably more than maybe more than a ghost story. My wife will not let me call it a ghost story because she will move out as soon as we call it a ghost story and make it official.
Fair enough.
And it's definitely not. It's more Casper than poltergeist kind of ghost story.
Right, right. Oh, and let me stop you real quick before you start, because I want to say, too, that we are definitely all about lighthearted ghost stories here on this show. I don't even know if I would even go so far as to believe in something that was truly scary and haunting. We aren't here to scare people or to share stories that are just absolutely terrifying.
Good. Yep. I won't terrify anyone too much. And our story is more of a probability story than anything else, less spectral. And what, as they say, we're in Connecticut and we've got an old house. When we bought the house, it had been picked clean over the generations. There was nothing from the house left here. The original family had been gone for 85 years. There were really no connections, no history to the house. Everything was more or less lost. But what we found is the house seems to have some sort of magnetic pull to it, which is a little strange. We keep finding little tidbits of information. People reach out to us. We randomly stumble on strange things. And we tell people, like, how could that happen? There's no way. There's no way that could happen. The best example of that is actually took place on Halloween in 2009.
Fitting.
Exactly. It became a little creepy, the timing of it. But at that point, I'd been doing research on our house, trying to figure out more about the owners and who had lived here in the past, which I always thought was super interesting. And my parents, who live in Maryland, where I grew up, are also kind of antique, old house people. They're really into that. They go to a lot of auctions. And so it was actually the day before Halloween in 2009. And I get a call from my dad, who prefaced it by saying, "This is going to sound crazy. You're going to think I've lost my mind finally," which you may have suspected already, but that's not happened. Said, "Your mom and I are driving. We're going to an auction in Pennsylvania today. There's some stuff we wanted to look at. As we're driving along, we passed a fire station and in Southern Pennsylvania, and they had a sign out, you know, country auction, something like that. So they said, oh, we'll stop in, take a look and see what there is to see." So they pull in and start looking through the stuff that's there. And my dad, who's a book collector, sees a card table with about 6 books on it. So he beelines right for the card table, starts looking through the books, and he picks up a photo album, a red kind of, you know, little 12x8 photo album, and starts flipping through. And it's all these old Victorian pictures of old houses and churches and farm lanes and things like that. And he gets to maybe the 3rd or 4th picture. And he says, "Oh, that looks like John and Jenny's house. It's a white salt box, you know, pretty distinctive profile, but very typical New England. There's thousands and thousands of them." And he flips another page. He's like, "Oh, that looks a lot like their barn." Hmm. And starts flipping more pages. And he's like, "That looks wildly like their house." So that at that point, he picks up the cell phone, and which is amazing for him. He's not very technologically capable. But calls, and that's the call I took. So he starts describing what he's seeing. And I'm like, "Yeah, it sounds like our house, but of course there's zero chance that it is. It's some other house." And so he's describing where trees are in the pictures. And I'm kind of looking out the windows. I'm like, "Well, there's a big tree there, or there's a stump there, or, you know, a few things, there's nothing there anymore." And he's going through and he gets to a picture that it's an old carriage shed, it looks like, or maybe a little cider mill or something like that. He's squinting at trying to read this writing, an advertisement on the roof of the picture. He says, "I think it says Comstock Brothers something or other." So of course then I'm like, "Oh boy, our house," at that point, this would have been Victorian era, you know, around 1900, 1890s, was owned by the Comstock family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Details, check, check, check. You know, everything starts to mesh up with our property. So of course, at that point, I'm, you know, "Don't leave without buying the photo album, whatever it costs."
Right.
So he takes it up and goes to ask him about, you know, "When's this coming up for auction?" "Not till the next day," you know, which would be Halloween. It was a Halloween auction. So I said, "Leave a bid, you know, put $1,000 on this photo album. I don't care what it costs. I've got to have the photo album." So they leave a bid, go back to Maryland to their house, drive back up the next morning for the live auction. And, you know, I think there were 2 bids on it. They paid $20 for this photo album. Bring it home. They take some, you know, little phone camera pictures and send them to us. I'm like, "Sure, that looks like our house." And then we had to wait, of course, until the next time my parents were coming up to Connecticut to see it, which was weeks, maybe a couple months. And they bring this album up, and sure enough, it's a full Victorian photo album, probably 30 pictures of our house, other buildings wow. in the town of Norwalk that we can identify, buildings that are gone where there are foundations, but just an unbelievable archive, pictures of the people who own the house, which is amazing. You know, to see the family standing in front of our door, the original front door in the house. We can, you know, I scanned all the pictures so you can zoom in and see all the details. Just an unbelievable record of the house.
That's amazing.
Incredible. I figure, what statistically, what is the probability of that happening? It's got to be zero, pretty close to zero, as close as you can get to zero.
And let's make it clear, too, you're in Norwalk, Connecticut, and your parents were in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania.
They were in out in the country in Pennsylvania, somewhere down near York, Lancaster area, southern Pennsylvania. So how does this photo album get from our house there, you know?
Right, right. And I guess I just called it Nowhere, Pennsylvania. That sounded really terrible. I meant
somewhere very nice, but yes. Rural Pennsylvania. Exactly.
Off the beaten path in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
It is a surprise. I mean, your parents ended up there at the same and randomly went to an auction and randomly found a photograph album.
And randomly recognized what it was. Yeah, which is, I could have picked up that photo album and probably would have been so skeptical, I would have put it right back down and said, nah, that looks like our house. Isn't that neat?
And salt boxes are very, very common in New England.
Very
much. Absolutely. And, you know, our house profile is very non-distinct. I would say there's lots of them that look like us. Just fascinating coincidence. And then just more things tend to kind of find their way back to the house. I said there were people in the pictures there. Now, I had no idea who any of the people were because none of the pictures had any writing on them. I'd say about a third of the pictures in the album were gone. So there was no key to any of the information. And then probably a year or two later, I get a random email from a woman, Debbie, who had read, I keep a blog about the house, to kind of just to document our restoration process so I don't forget anything we've done, a good place to store photos of it and things like that. And she had been doing genealogical work. She lived in Texas at that point, and was tracing her ancestors to her Comstocks. Found the blog and said, oh, I think my Enos Kellogg was my great, 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 great grandfather. And we, you know, exchanged some emails about that. And she's like, you know what? I've got a box of stuff from the family. Let me just see if there's anything useful in there. The next morning I get an email from her, like, I found stuff. And she had found pictures, which was basically the Rosetta Stone, because it was family pictures of the same people that were in our album, all marked on the back. This Comstock, that Comstock, this other Comstock.
Wow.
So, you know, I could instantly see put a name to exactly who the people were standing in front of our house in all these pictures, which is just amazing. And I mean, the coincidences are weird. The Debbie, who calls herself my house cousin, lived most of her life in the same town in Maryland that I grew up in, totally randomly. Yet, you know, I live in the house that her ancestors built in the 1770s. Yeah, and the old house community becomes very small very quickly.
Yes.
You know, you find a lot of confluences and interesting tidbits.
Very true.
That pop up.
So while you were telling that, I did lose my internet just a hair. So I do have a question that you may have already answered, but I wanted to reiterate. So do you feel like some of those pictures that she found might have been pictures that belonged in that photograph album?
I don't think so. They were slightly different size. So I don't think they came out of that album, but they were certainly almost from the same time. The facial hair, there were some really good Victorian beards and mustaches on some of the people, and they were, you know, they matched up. The ages looked pretty much the same. So I don't think they could have been off by more than, you know, maybe 10 years different, if that.
Right, right.
But there are great pictures of the house itself too. And this is at a time when people, you didn't have your iPhone camera. Most people didn't have a camera at all. And if you did, you're sitting for a formal portrait in a gallery somewhere. So the fact that someone had a camera at, which, you know, a country farmhouse, you know, in Connecticut was pretty unusual at that point, I think. And then for it all to survive and find its way back to the house, because I can't believe that there's any way the album came from anywhere other than our house. Because I mean, it was, you know, intimate family pictures of, you know, babies sitting in front of our stone walls and their dogs and their prized pigs. The great picture of a team of oxen in our, what's now our driveway, which was the barnyard, you know, just two big creatures right, parked right where our cars are now.
Do you ever get fascinated by the types of pictures that people took then, back then, knowing that cameras were scarce? I mean, my grandfather had a camera, one of those little, it was, I think, I can't remember the name of it, but maybe a Brownie, like before Brownie.
Brownies,
where it
yeah.
was, yeah, and he had this, and his, all the pictures that I found that he took were of dogs. And they weren't even his dogs. They were just, you know, he just really liked dogs. And so he would go around and take pictures of people's dogs.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. We had a lot of dog pictures. There were probably three different dogs in about seven of the 20 some pictures. It was the kids, the dogs, and the animals.
Right.
Which, as I look back through my iPhone, and the house, and that's pretty much what I'm taking pictures of now: house picture, kids picture, pets picture. You know, so I guess some things don't change that much. But
it's so true.
It's funny. You know, we had the same pictures of our kids sitting, you know, in front of the same stone walls, our dogs in front of the same buildings. You know, it's some things never change, I guess.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, if I had a team of oxen, you bet I'd take a picture of them standing there.
Absolutely. I want a team of oxen just so I could take that picture again, you know, a now and then picture in our driveway.
Right.
Our town frowns upon that, apparently. But we'll see. Maybe someday.
Yeah. I don't think I can get away with that either. So that's interesting. This idea that, I mean, I don't know, you know, we're talking about, like you said, spectral, ghost, paranormal, but this idea that maybe all of these artifacts have kind of left the house, but the house is somewhat drawing them back in these random ways.
Yeah, and we see that with information, you know, little tidbits, weird things that you would never know until someone stops by the house. We had someone stop by the house a few years ago who was deep into his 90s, and he was visiting from Florida, and he wanted to stop by. On the way back, his father had been the head gardener on the property in the early 20th century, when it was kind of a gentleman's farm for a rich ophthalmologist from New York City. He would come out here on the weekends and play farmer. And he used to help his dad out on the property when he was, you know, 12 years old. He said, "Oh, I remember the doctor driving his Model T into the barn across the street, which is now a house." But he said, "Yeah, they used to park it right there. And I remember when they moved, they disassembled the front porch that was on the house and moved it to their new house up the street in New Canaan and put it on there." And we had pictures of the house with no porch originally, then with a porch, and then now with no porch again. So it kind of filled in.
Oh.
What happened to that porch? Well, they moved it up, you know, a mile up the road. So little things just find their way back. Another, like the material objects, again, my parents, they seem to be the conduit for this. There was I collect stoneware and redware pottery. Norwalk is a big center of that in the 19th century. They made it and shipped it all up and down the East Coast. And there was an auction at again, in Maryland, of pottery. And there was a big redware plate made in Norwalk. It's a very distinctive looking kind of pottery. And they would write names across the front of it or little sayings. And this one said Enos across the front of it. It was made 1830s. And, you know, I looked in all the records for the town. There was two Enoses who lived in our town. One, the one who lived in our house for 40 years and who died right about 1830, who died in 1832. He's buried up at the end of our street. And then his namesake nephew, who was born a year or so within Enos's death. So I've got to think it's almost certainly a commemorative for one of the two of those things, which means it may well have come out of our house originally as well. So my parents, of course, went to the auction, you know, bought the plate for me, a nice, I wasn't going to pay the money for it, but they gave it to us for a Christmas present. Just weird things that come full circle, I think.
Right.
And that's way better than scary ghosts and things like that. You know, these are just fun stories. You know, they let us actually sleep in the house and not freak out too much. But it does feel like there's something, you know, swirling around that tends to, that wants to restore an order somehow to where things should be or where they're rightfully meant to be.
Well, you have had some experiences that give you pause. We're not going to call them ghost stories because your wife may listen to this and ghosts don't exist.
Unexplained phenomena, yes.
Yeah. You heard it from me, folks. I'm refusing to believe today. But yeah, no, I should clarify that in that I used to think that I didn't believe in any of this. But the more I do this podcast and I mean, I wouldn't put my finger on it as a ghost, but yes, there are unexplained phenomena that I don't necessarily have the answers for, and I don't require the answers anymore at all. I find them interesting, and maybe there are things in that don't make sense to me, but it doesn't make them not true.
Exactly. And we had that from the first week we lived in the house. We were doing a massive beginning kickoff to the restoration because the house was in terrible shape when we bought it 19 years ago, which is why we're still restoring it 19 years later. But we were at the point where we just moved out of our apartments in New York City. We were finally living in the house, but we were living in our TV room, which was the kind of one of the parlors for the house originally. And there was construction going on everywhere. And the only thing we weren't dealing with was the electrical, because that was such a huge project. We were going to deal with that a little bit later. But every single day we would be in the house and light bulb after light bulb would burn out in the house. Not as power tools were being used, just randomly bulbs would go up. You replace them, they'd go out again. So it got to the point where Jenny, the severe non-believer in all of this, stood up one night when another light bulb goes out. She stands up and just says out loud, "All right, ghosts, we're here to save and fix up this house. We're not going to do anything to hurt it." That was the end of it. No more, really? No more burn bulbs. No more popped anything. So that was the point when she stopped wanting to know anything, because I think she felt that it was a little too real for her at that point.
Right.
But we've had that. We've got one room that it's a upstairs bedroom, one of their original bedrooms in the house. And everyone sleeps really well in there, but dogs have a tendency to track across the room as if someone had walked into the room and walked out through an area where there used to be a door, but no longer is, which is a little strange. That's my son's room. And he's more open to supernatural things. He's the only one who says he's actually seen something apparition-like there. He had no fear about it. He's very matter of fact. He's like, "Oh yeah, I saw a little boy laid down in my bed next to me last night for a while. And I watched him for a while and I was a little scared, but not really. And then he disappeared."
That's wild.
Which is great. Wow. And he's 11. This happened maybe 3 years ago, and he's still very matter of fact. That's what happened. And the closest I've gotten is when my daughter was born. She was not a great sleeper, so I would just walk her in laps around our living room, which is the original kitchen for the house. And I'd get to one point in the room and I would smell someone smoking a pipe. I'd get to that point and I'd smell it. And I'm like, "That's pipe tobacco. My grandfather smoked a pipe sometimes. Like, I know that smell." And Jenny, still, she's like, "Oh, you're crazy. There were some dried flowers in the room." She's like, "It was the lavender or whatever it is." I'm like, "It was the smell of pipe tobacco. Sure, as sure as I've ever smelled anything, I know what that was." But luckily, that's as real as they've manifested for me. I don't want to see the little boy walking around. I'm happy. No. He can have the run of the place as long as he stays out of my line of sight.
Okay, you guys are not going to believe this. I have to pause for a second because there is a woodpecker outside. This is a nightmare.
Or the ghosts are knocking on your house.
Stacey, you have to include this in the podcast.
I feel like, yeah, maybe this is my paranormal activity. Maybe somebody is sending me this exactly. message from a woodpecker outside my window.
Is it Morse code? Do you know Morse code?
Oh, no. But you know what? It will be recorded and I will check Morse code and see if there's something to it. Hold on just a second.
Sure. So, Devin, have you seen anything in your house?
I haven't. It's been odd because, you know, we're 167 years and, you know, you'd think there'd be something. And I know I've researched and found the original family that was here. Yep. And so, and I know some of the early residents, but I haven't yet. We're not sleeping in the main part of the house yet. We're still sleeping in the back because the master bedroom is still an unfinished space and we have no bathroom above the second floor. I mean, so when we get a bathroom installed, we'll move to the front of the house where we should be. Maybe then.
That'll be the real test to see who else is residing there.
Because I will literally go for a week or two at a time without even going into the rooms.
Yep.
All right, I'm back. I have short-term scared the woodpecker away. Sorry. Oh, my goodness. I will say, back to our topic of this, I feel like kids and dogs or kids and pets are sort of, they have common experiences. When people tell me things that happen to kids, like, most of them don't feel afraid, which is wild to me, because I think I spent most of my childhood being afraid of pretty much everything. When it was dark, after dark, the whole world was very scary. And I find it very interesting that most of the kids who have actual experiences, not just are afraid they'll have experiences, are not worried at all. They're kind of just interested, inquisitive.
Very matter of fact.
Yeah. And likewise, the pets are the ones that seem to be able to sense something when humans have no clue.
It's interesting. Of course, I Googled, ghosts in old houses as soon as we started having weird things. And the things that came up were kids, were pets, and smells.
Yeah.
Strongly associated with, you know, supernatural activity or whatever. Like, oh, there it is. The internet says it's true. It must be. So.
It has to be. It absolutely has to be. Well, and I was lived here. I mean, I've told this story before, I think, on the podcast, too, just real quickly, that I had a friend who asked me if I had experienced any ghostly, you know, paranormal stuff. And I laughed. I thought she was joking because this had never crossed my mind until I moved into this house. Then I started thinking about it. And the smell thing, like when I'm in the basement, and it still happens now and then, I smell like body odor, but it doesn't smell bad. It just smells like working person odor. Yeah. And it wafts here and there. And I smelled it just this week. In fact, I was working. I don't smell it all the time, but that was probably one of the first things. And that had happened right from the beginning. And I just never even noticed, you know, I mean, I noticed, but I didn't ever put my finger on anything like, oh, that's weird. There's something strange somewhere here in the basement.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. I have to keep attuned for that. See if I smell it. Make sure it's not just my kids, you know, who have their own smells. But no.
Well, that's how you know, because you know your kids smell and you know your dog smell. And you know this is neither of those two things.
We will be sure to include links to the blog and the show notes. So, in fact, even the post about your ghost experiences or your non-ghost experiences.
Right. Thank you.
Your coincidences.
Exactly.
Plus, I'm sure our listeners would love to learn more about your house, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that may prompt me to actually update the blog, which I've neglected woefully for the past couple of years. We'll see.
John, would you like to share the blog website address?
Sure. It's Enos Kellogg House, enoskellogg house.blogspot.com. And if you Google Enos Kellogg, that's usually the first thing that comes up.
Awesome.
Great. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us today?
No, thanks for the opportunity. I'm like Devin, I'm an introvert, but other than when it comes to talking about my old house, in which case people are like, oh, enough already, please stop. So thank you for providing me with a welcome forum for that. I appreciate it.
I can talk about my old house endlessly as well.
Yeah.
Well, I can talk about anything endlessly all the time. So. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today and telling us your story. And this is really cool. Now I'm going to look at photo albums at auctions and just wonder. I know there are some websites that find pictures of old houses and it's kind of like a dating website. You know, I found this picture of an old house. Is this your old house? Or Miss Connections, you know, that thing in the newspaper. Yeah. I don't know any, but if I do find some between now and this air date, I will try to put them, link to those on the website. Also, recently there was a photo colorization website that was going around on Instagram, which I thought was really interesting. You could your old photos in or scan them in, and then they would sort of colorize them in what they believed would be authentic colors for the time. And that could be kind of fun too.
Got to try that out. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll link to it.
So, John, it was really great to have you on the show today. We had a lot of fun listening to the stories and fascinating about the finding of that photo album.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. It's great speaking with both of you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we will see you around the internet.
Absolutely. I'll be tuning in.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening today. For more information about this episode, including show notes and transcripts, visit TrueTalesFromOldHouses.com.
Until next time.
Bye for now.